Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by AutoSlash. AutoSlash may be the best way to find the lowest possible rate when you rent a car. They'll help you find the best rate and then will continue to look for an even better rate in case it goes down. AutoSlash.com. I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo. Amateur Traveler, episode 613. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about rockets and civil rights and beaches, Mardi Gras, dive bars, and rock and roll as we go on an epic road trip of Alabama. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Just see if we don't deliver on that word epic that I put in the intro. We'll have two different sponsors of this episode that we'll hear from in a bit, but first, we've got lots to talk about as we talk about Alabama. I'd like to welcome the show Larry Blyberg, who is a freelance travel writer and editor. Also has his own websites at larrybleiberg.com and also at civilrightstravel.com. And he's come to talk to us about Alabama. Larry, welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be here, Chris.
This is a show that is about a year and a half in the making, at least, and not with Larry. We just got him involved recently, but I've done three trips to Alabama in the last year and a half and have been really wanting to do a show about it. But I really wanted to do it with somebody who knew more about Alabama than I did. And Larry, you've lived in Alabama for 11 years, I think we say.
That's right, over a decade.
And you came there to work a job in the travel magazine industry at
Coastal Living, which was based here, as is Southern Living and Cooking Light and a lot of other magazines.
Excellent. Why should somebody go to Alabama?
There's lots of reasons. And I think the place to start is that most people don't know about Alabama. They think they know. There's stereotypes. There's what they've heard over the years. But the truth is the South remains one of the most colorful and least understood parts of the country. And the best way to learn about it is to go there. And it's easy. It's easy to do. And a visit, I think, will turn people's view on their head. It's the center of civil rights history, which I think a lot of people know. And the best way to understand that is to visit the sites where these famed events happened. But it's also got incredible food, one of the most vibrant food scenes in the country right now, mountains, and some of the best beaches in the country, if not the world, which, again, does not fit that stereotype that people have about the Deep South.
Well, and I'm going to be one of those people that admits that Alabama was something like my 47th state to go to or something like that. And it was kept to the last somewhat because I grew up in the 60s. And my picture of Alabama was what I saw in the nightly news. It was that troubled civil rights history that we talk about, which we can celebrate what happened now and what went on. But it was kind of tough to watch it all going on at the time. And that colored my views of Alabama for 50 years. And I have fallen in love with the state here in the last three trips that I've gone through. And a little surprised to say that because I didn't really expect to. But what would you recommend for an itinerary for Alabama?
Alabama literally goes from the mountains to the seas. And I would start, just for simplicity's sake, in the north, just in Huntsville and in the Florence area, where you will see incredible NASA rocket history, because that was an integral part of the NASA system, the NASA development. And then a rock and roll shrine in the Muscle Shoals Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And then down to Birmingham, where you do find that civil rights history, where a lot of those disturbing images happened half a century ago, frankly. And now it's one of the most vibrant food scenes in the country and a place that really has a buzz to it. There's a lot of new parks, there's architecture, there's a lot of people that maybe decades ago would have left to go off to find their fortune in New York or Los Angeles. And now they're staying there and creating some wonderful things. And then I'd go down to Montgomery, which is the state capital, where an incredible new memorial is just open. I don't know if you've seen that, the Equal Justice
Initiative. Yeah, it was just there.
The lynching memorial, which I was told by an architecture critic is maybe the most important memorial in this country in a decade, right up there with the Vietnam War Memorial to the victims of lynching, a very sobering, in-your-face, challenging kind of place. Then go down to places that I don't think are as much on the radar for people as far as Alabama. Mobile is a surprise. Mobile, I call the Little Easy, because it's a lot like New Orleans, but it's tiny, it's small, it's much easier to navigate, and it's a lot of fun. And then down to those beautiful, beautiful Gulf Shore beaches, the white sand, sugar sand beaches that I literally... I'd been in Mauritius, of all places, in the Indian Ocean on the beaches, and then I came to the Gulf Coast the next month for some reason. It just worked out, and the Gulf Coast beaches were better than what I'd seen in the Indian Ocean. So
they are surprisingly beautiful. I will back you up on that, and both the surprise part and the beautiful part. Yeah.
Yeah. That will give you a good week from north to south.
That sounds like 2 to 3 weeks there, potentially.
Well, that's true. I mean, I move fast, but and then you'll just have to pick and choose between that, because there is a lot to do, whether your interest is history or rock music or food or relaxing. There's a lot to see and experience. And I think what's wonderful, which is the experience you had, is that it will be a surprise. This is not what you're expecting. When you go to Yellowstone, as stunning as Yellowstone is, you've seen pictures all your life. You know what to expect. Alabama is a surprise, a pleasant surprise.
And I would recommend, so we're talking about doing the whole state on this, so we're really talking about a road trip at this point, and it's an easy road trip. I've done the drive, I've done it in both directions, and the roads are good, and it's a pretty state. I think that was another surprise to me, having driven back roads in Alabama to get off to some historic sites that we'll talk about. It's worth a drive. So you started us in Huntsville, the city that people may be surprised to learn has more rocket scientists, more PhDs per capita than any city in the U.S.
I was going to trot that statistic out to you, but you beat me to it. Yeah.
Yeah, it might come up in conversation in Huntsville. Let's just say that. They have t-shirts that say, it's not rocket science. Oh, yes, it is.
Well, the saying in Alabama is the brains are in Huntsville, the money's in Birmingham, and the power's in Montgomery. We may touch on that as we discuss it. But Huntsville is, it's a company town, essentially. The company being the U.S. government and NASA, and it's a strong military presence. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area. And Huntsville feels to me like suburban Washington, because you just have a lot of people connected to the government there. But the Space and Rocket Center is fascinating. I think you've been there more recently than I have. You can speak to what they have there. But it really is how we got to the moon. It happened through Alabama, which is a surprise.
Yeah. So when you're in the Space and Rocket Center, for instance, which is where Space Camp is also, if you have a little extra time and are really a space buff, adults or kids alike can take classes at Space Camp or be there for a whole week. You could do one or the other. But this museum that's there, for instance, has one of the three remaining Saturn V rockets. This is where the Saturn V was developed. It's where it was designed and where it was tested out at the Air Force Base there, out at the Marshall Space Center there.
The Marshall Space Center.
And you can do a tour of the Marshall Space Center and see that testing facility, which they've just been using for testing the rockets that will get us to Mars. But the Space Center, again, not only do you have the Saturn V hanging in the middle and just amazing exhibits in terms of things about the Saturn V, about the space program, especially about the Apollo missions, but as you're standing there looking up at the Saturn V rocket, a guy is going to walk up to you, for instance, who's a docent, and he's a rocket scientist. He's the guy who designed that piece that you're looking at there, or you're looking at the control ring, and some docent, some 90-year-old man these days, will walk up to you and say, oh yeah, I worked on this. And they worked with Wernher von Braun, who was the German scientist, and his team who came over having designed the V2, and basically we founded our rocket science on the work that they had done, and they settled here in Huntsville. People say, oh yeah, I remember that scientist, and he taught my kids Little League team. So just a fascinating place.
Oh, it certainly is.
Especially for nerds like me.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't have to be a deep dive, but it can be, and it's fun. It's a science type exhibit that's very interactive. So
oh, absolutely.
It's not just, you're not just looking at stuff, you are talking to people and interacting with it. And I've never been to space camp, which I think my parents hated me for not feeling so deprived, but what
I
a
think
cool
space
experience.
Camp, I would have to have gone at it as an adult because it started after I was a kid, but you can go as an adult. I've done a couple different things there. And if you want really interactive, like getting in one of those things where they spin you in all sorts of different things all at once, you can do that. Or the simulator for what the gravity would be like on the moon as you jump around. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah. The other thing that I would recommend in Huntsville on non-geeky is the arts complex there, the Low Arts Mill, or the Low Mill Arts Complex, which is one of the largest facilities dedicated to arts that I know of in the country. This old industrial textile mill that's been turned into an art space with people doing all sorts of different kinds of things there, where the artists are in residence or showing galleries or things like that. It's definitely worth a stop if you're interested in that sort of thing at all.
Oh, it's a fun, fun place. And again, the artists are there. You can talk to them. I almost was talked into buying and taking up the cigar box guitar because it looks so much fun.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay.
Watching that build that. That's a good part.
Let's take a break here and hear from the first of our two sponsors. Again, the sponsor of this episode is AutoSlash. AutoSlash is going to help you find a rental car at a good price by not only searching across different rental car companies, but also searching for different discounts that would be available through AAA, Costco, AARP, credit cards, frequent flyer programs, and all those things. They're going to check literally hundreds of coupons and discount codes, which I don't know about you, but I don't have time to do that myself. And then after it helps you find the best available rate, it's going to continue to look for price drops and better deals. If it finds a lower rate, then it will email you so you can take advantage of the savings. It's like price protection for your rental. It's almost like having an assistant who is fully dedicated to finding you the best deal on a rental car. I have not used it personally, but I have a friend who has and had a good experience. They say that renters on average save 30% or more using AutoSlash. Check them out. AutoSlash.com.
And then there's an area, Campus 805, which is fun too. It's a yes. former middle school, mm-hmm. which, I mean, how's this for a middle school fantasy? It's been turned into a home for breweries and bars and speakeasies, which is all on a former middle school campus. That's a really fun place to visit too.
Well, and if you look at least one of the breweries, and I'm trying to think, there's Yellowhammer there, which has a pizza place right next to it, which is really good. Oddly enough, the rules on beer production in Alabama are only recently have allowed breweries. So it's still a very small and growing thing in Alabama. And they don't allow it at a license that lets you produce beer in the quantity that makes it a worthwhile bar. You can't have food. And so the way they do it is there's a brewery, and then right next to it is a place that is independent but is selling pizza. So you have two receipts, but you can sit at the same table. But
before we move on from Huntsville, the last thing about the breweries is that it's not a surprise when you think about it that Huntsville was a pioneer in home brewing, because we have all these scientists there, all these engineers who just love geeking out and doing their own brew. So that's sort of what the craft brew capital of Alabama, although you can find craft breweries across the state at this
right.
point.
Well, there was a decent food scene there. Now, I haven't been to Birmingham yet, but I enjoyed the food scene in Huntsville. One place that you can get food, but I would recommend for entertainment, is the Lumberyard. The Lumberyard is a bar/restaurant, and then it also has, four stages that you can have small bands playing. And so it's a great place because there's also corners that you can actually hang out and chat. It's just a very quirky place that was a lumberyard, and it's decorated with a bizarre variety of collected sorts of things, old bathtubs and faux brick walls that were made by the person who owns it, whose daughter works in Hollywood. It's just a great place. It's one of those places you go to and you say, I wish my hometown had this. That's really what I felt about the lumberyard.
We're already starting to take some side trips, but about an hour from Huntsville is a town that most people have, if they're rock and roll fans, they may have heard of it, Muscle Shoals in Florence, Alabama. It's actually four cities, but you've heard the name Muscle Shoals, and then the big city there is Florence. And this is a tiny place. It's not on any interstate, but it has a really incredible music history and a sort of a creative history. You have some famous fashion designers who live there and produce there and sell there.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah, Billy Reed and Natalie Channon. But it's most famous for the Muscle Shoals Sound Studio, a tongue twister. This is where, well, the Rolling Stones most famously recorded Brown Sugar. Mick Jagger wrote Wild Horses while sitting in the bathroom there. But everybody you ever heard of, for the most part, has recorded there, from Paul Simon to Cher to Donny Osmond to newer bands, the Black Keys, the Drive-By Truckers. Anybody, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Pink Floyd, it goes on and on and on and on. And they came to this tiny spot in the middle of nowhere. I mean, compared to Los Angeles and New York and even Nashville. And they recorded in what was, I think it was at one point, a casket warehouse that became a sound studio. And the nice thing is, in the last year or so, I was there a decade ago, and it was being run by a former musician, which meant I had to call him to wake him up at 2 p.m. because he'd had a session the night before. And sort of, he groggily came in, unlocked it, and showed me around. Now, Dr. Dre has donated, I think it was $1 million, his foundation, and it's completely redone. Beautiful. And it's been used as a sound studio, but it's open for tours. And I've had one woman who leads tours, whose husband was part of the band, the Muscle Shoals, the Swampers, the rhythm section there. She said she has men come into this sound studio, see the studio, and then they just break down in tears. Because this is where the soundtrack of their childhood, their teenagehood, their life was recorded in this one building here. It's a real touchstone for people. And when you start hearing and seeing what was recorded there, it just blows you away. Why did they come to Muscle Shoals, Alabama? It was several reasons. One, I think some of the rock stars liked getting away from the crowds. Nobody was bothering them there. It also had, this was back in the days of segregation, they had an integrated scene there. So you had black musicians and white musicians who could work together. Dwayne Allman of the Allman Brothers was playing there. He's Otis Redding. Lots of sounds came together and mixed. And so for a rock and roll pilgrimage, for an engineering pilgrimage, you go to Huntsville. Right. For a rock and roll pilgrimage, you go to Muscle Shoals. And it's a fun little town. There's some nice little restaurants, a couple boutique hotels that have opened recently. There's a Frank Lloyd Wright home there that's open for tours, which is one of my favorite Frank Lloyd Wright homes because it really feels like you could live there. It doesn't seem overwhelming. It's sort of like if the Brady Bunch had a Frank Lloyd Wright home, this is what it would look like. and so Florence and Muscle Shoals is one of those places that most people don't know about, have never heard of, and it's worth a trip. Again, it's maybe an hour from Huntsville.
Yep. Well, if you're a history buff, that's also near the Natchez Trace Trail, one of the old Indian and trading trails that will take you down into Mississippi. So we actually did that and then ended up in Mississippi as part of a larger road trip. But you were heading us a different direction.
Yeah.
You were heading us to Birmingham.
Yes. Right. Well, Birmingham, which is where I live, it's a city that I think has really kind of found its footing in the last decade. In the years I've lived here, it's become a much more interesting place. It's always had a lot going on, but it's finally shaken the images of 50, 60 years ago of the civil rights era. And not that it's hiding from it. There's an incredible civil rights museum there. It's now been declared a national monument, so there's going to be national park type exhibits here in the years to come. There are parks, there's walking trails, there's very graphic sculpture in a park of dogs lunging at you. So you really know what happened there. And the 16th Street Baptist Church you can visit, which was bombed, where those four little girls died.
Right.
The basement is open there. So you can really, that history is not hidden. It puts it there. So that's one thing that it's an important part to coming to Birmingham is seeing that civil rights history. But another reason people are coming, and I'd mentioned the food scene here, it's incredible. Just in the last month, you're going to hear this name. Frank Stitt is the chef, and his restaurant Highland Bar and Grill just won the James Beard Award for the best restaurant in America. Now, it didn't happen overnight. He'd been a nominee 9 times, and he finally won on the 10th. And then his pastry chef just won best pastry chef in America. Huh. So you've got a lot going on there. And this restaurant, let me explain a little bit. Frank Stitt was from Cullman, Alabama. He went to work with Chez Panisse, the famous restaurant in Berkeley, studied in France, and then he came back home. And he decided to take down-home ingredients, collards, greens, grits, fresh vegetables, all these things, and use sort of European techniques to cook them, which a lot of people are doing now, but not 30 years ago. And he created sort of a little dining empire here because people that work for him open their own restaurants and they open their own restaurants. So you have this a wonderful kind of ripple effect through Birmingham and through Alabama. And the James Beard Awards, as I mentioned, there were 7 nominees from Alabama this year, and 2 of them were winners. So you can eat some incredible food here. And people are literally coming from around the country just to dine at Highland and then Frank Stitt's other restaurants. So there's another reason to come, just for the food here.
Excellent. And let's hear from our second sponsor. This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by World Nomads, the global travel lifestyle and insurance brand for independent travelers. You've all heard my manifesto. If you haven't, it's on the About page of the show's website, and I urge you to read it. The short of it is that travel is better if you observe, appreciate, connect, and if possible, contribute to the local community. These are the same principles that World Nomads talks about in their own podcast, How to Learn a New Skill, Connect with Locals, Travel Responsibly, and Give Back. They're unashamedly an adventure travel company, so some of the destinations they discuss may surprise you, but also delight you. They've talked about taking a traditional fishing boat around the outer islands of the Philippines, but also looked at Berlin through the eyes of a traveler who has put down roots there. The World Nomads podcast, you can find it on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Spotify, or go to worldnomads.com/podcasts, but make sure you come back to Amateur Traveler. And then we moved on to Montgomery. So we get the brains in Huntsville, the money in Birmingham, and the power in Montgomery.
Well, can I take you over just out of town very quickly to a place that you would never expect to see? This is worth a detour. You're going to be, it's off an interstate. That's the Barber Racetrack Motorcycle Park, a motorcycle museum. And this is another one of those delights of travel because it's such a surprise. This is the world's largest collection of motorcycles. Well, yeah. But it's exhibited in a museum that looks just like the Guggenheim in New York. Huh. And it's as stunning, architecturally stunning as it. It's glass. There's elevators in the middle with motorcycles all around you. Motorcycles from the earliest motorcycles that were ever created back in the 1800s, World War II motorcycles. If you're into it, you're going to be in heaven. But even if you're not into motorcycles, you'll just be astonished by that. That's just off the interstate, just maybe 20 miles outside of town. Okay. So I just needed to get that in there because it's such a surprise. But let's head down to Montgomery. You're right. Montgomery is the capital. It was the capital of the Confederacy at a time.
Mm-hmm. Just the beginning, yeah.
Right. And the cradle of the Civil Rights Movement, which is an interesting contrast when you think about it.
When I was there just 3 weeks ago or something like that, somebody from the tourism board took us to the corner where they found in Montgomery. There's a fountain right where Dexter Ave, which ends at the Capitol building, meets, I think it's Commerce. And it's where the market used to be, where the slave market used to be. It's where the two cities came together. And if you stand at that spot, you're standing looking at the spot where the Confederate delegates voted to fire on Fort Sumter to start the Civil War. The office where they sent the telegram from would have been behind you. You got the Capitol building on the right where Jefferson Davis swore his oath of office. You're standing looking at the bus stop where Rosa Parks got on the bus, and the block to your left is where she got arrested. You're also looking at the route that the marchers from Selma would come as they marched finally on their third attempt to basically march to Montgomery and to demand the right to register to vote.
Right.
They're looking up there at the Capitol where George Wallace was proudly proclaiming segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And if you were to walk to the Capitol, you'd walk right past Martin Luther King's church, where this 26-year-old pastor got involved in the bus boycott and went on to largely lead the civil rights movement. It's just a fascinating place in terms of the history, as both of the Civil War and the civil rights happen here.
Something that struck me, you'll see this in Birmingham, you'll see it in Montgomery, you'll see it in Selma, and you just pointed out you'll see it in Huntsville in a different context. You can go to the Alamo and enjoy the history there, but you can't talk to someone who fought in the Alamo. Likewise at Gettysburg. But you can, when you're in Birmingham and in Montgomery, talk to people that were part of these world-changing events. I mean, they're getting older. There's fewer every year.
Yeah, you should go now.
Exactly. Yeah. But you can talk to people that were there, that knew Martin Luther King. I remember talking to a woman who used to babysit Martin Luther King's children when he was going to protest meetings in Montgomery. That was pretty incredible. I mean, that's just a degree of separation from a Nobel Prize leader who changed the world. And these things can happen. It doesn't sometimes it's scripted. Sometimes there are events that you can go to. But the one thing that we haven't talked about in Alabama, or one thing, is just the hospitality and the friendliness, which to me is maybe the number one reason to go. And that means you can just start chatting with people and you'll find out, oh yeah, I used to look after Martin's kids or Dr. King's kids. And that's just, it's mind-blowing and it's wonderful.
Now, you mentioned the new memorial, and I want to go in that just a little more depth. So you called it the Lynching Memorial. The official name, the National Memorial to Peace and Justice, and it's 800 different metal monoliths hanging from the ceiling, each one representing one of the 800 counties that had documented lynchings. And to the extent that they're known, the names of who was lynched on the monuments. Very moving and unusual memorial, I'd have to say, too.
Oh, my goodness. It's stunning to walk in there. At first, these monuments are hanging in front of you, but then it slopes down, and at some point, they're hanging over your head.
Yeah, yeah.
An obvious reference to the bodies that were hanging. Mm-hmm. It's stunning. And it's also provocative. I mean, I think the man behind it, Brian Stevenson, who really is trying to make a statement, is almost single-handedly put lynching back into the discussion, into a national, maybe it was never in the national discussion as much as, it never was as much as it should be, and now it's people are talking about this. He has a replica, there are 800 hanging, but there are also 800 flat in a courtyard outside, and his challenge is to every county that has a monument to come claim theirs and display it back in their home county. And as he said, he told us when the day it opened, this will become a report card on which places are facing their history and speaking to their history. I think it gets complicated because some of these are very, very poor places. But nonetheless, in a year or two, you'll be able to see which ones are left there and what's and which have come back. Right. Already, I know people from Charlottesville, Virginia are planning a pilgrimage down there to bring soil from the lynching site that's documented and to bring back the monument. And I think other communities are doing the same. So this is not just a monument to make you stop and think, but it's a monument to really speaking to current politics and the world that we're in.
Well, and then speaking of that, they also opened at the same time or shortly thereafter, I can't remember what the order was, but the Legacy Museum also
same
opened.
Same time.
Okay. And that documents, again, the Black experience from slavery to sort of freedom, to no longer slavery, but a lot of people who were basically being incarcerated and rented out as convict labor that were in some cases doing worse than they were doing under slavery. But 20 to 40% of convict labor in a given year in some counties would die. It's like, oh my Lord. That is something I did not know. And then talking about modern incarceration and basically the stats that one in three young Black men should expect to do time in jail.
And again, it's another provocative political statement that they're making there. And it draws a direct connection between slavery and the history and mass incarceration today. And people can debate that. People do debate that, but it's a strong point and a very powerful museum.
Yeah.
A reason alone to make the trip to Montgomery. Well,
and I would say that if that's too much of a downer, so after you've done that, go do the Rosa Parks Museum and Library, which is more uplifting because mm-hmm. it's focusing on the civil rights movement. And I thought it was a very effective museum. You're standing there looking at a full-size bus, and in the windows of the bus are screens that are basically reenacting the scene. And then you go into another room and they tell you more about the whole history of this year-long bus boycott that largely kicked off the civil rights movement in 1955. Or go to the Dexter Avenue King Memorial Church and get a tour there that they will literally give you a hug. So that would be a great way to end your visit there as you're talking about civil rights.
The other part, and it's part of the Dexter Avenue Church, is the parsonage where King lived, where mm-hmm. he had most famously his moment of doubt. I'm sure he had many moments of doubt, but this is one that he wrote about in his autobiography, where you can go to the kitchen where he was sitting one night. He had just gotten death threats on the phone. He had a baby, an infant child there at his family,
yep.
and he wondered, do I really want to do this? And again, the tours are so powerful, the docents are so powerful to really put you in his shoes and to realize this man has been rightfully mythologized, but this was a man who was looking at a very frightening path ahead of him. It's only in looking in the rearview mirror that history fits these patterns. When you're in
right,
the middle of
exactly.
it, it's terrifying. So that's, yeah, we are getting kind of down, and we don't want this to be down.
Well, so while you're in Montgomery, I would also recommend you take in a biscuits game.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
The Montgomery Biscuits is a double league team. Gorgeous stadium. When I was there with the tourism board, they said we're going to be in a luxury box, and I laughed because surely a luxury box wouldn't exist in a AA stadium. I was just so wrong. This is a stadium that has state-of-the-art Jumbotron, instant replay, luxury boxes, and all that. And then the goofy things that go on at minor league baseball, where you're running the bases between the innings, chasing the mascot or something else that's going on, the biscuit toss and those sort of things.
And the biscuit cannon that shoots canned biscuits out to the... I've never
how
made it to you, the luxury box. I
mean, how can you beat that? And no exactly. seat is more than 24 rows from the field. If you haven't taken in a minor league baseball game, I love major league baseball, but minor league has a whole... The baseball's not as good, but the whole experience is just, it's different and it's fun. Good family entertainment.
A biscuits t-shirt is a great souvenir. I brought it to people across the country. So,
and if they just happen to be playing the jumbo shrimp, that's just a bonus. You just can't beat that for a good
goodness.
Time. There are lots more things to do there. I've got a couple blog posts, but we need to move on. We got other places we're going to see here. You took us down to Mobile, I think, next.
Right, which is we're just sending basically going down the center of the state. Mobile, this is something that isn't really in guidebooks. I don't quite understand. It's a city that is one of the oldest cities in the country, mm-hmm. on the continent. It was developed by the French, and it has been. It's much like New Orleans because it's a Gulf Coast city. It was a
right.
Gulf Coast port. And it's interesting, even in Alabama, Mobile kind of sticks to itself. They kind of let the good times roll and don't look to the rest of the state. And it also, surprisingly, was the site of the first Mardi Gras in the country, which
that's
not,
what I
not
to get
New
to.
Orleans.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I was there for Mardi Gras, and I'd been to Mardi Gras in New Orleans, and I thought, oh, it's going to be a quaint little sweet little thing here. Oh, my gosh, it was incredible. I got to march in one of the parades, and it was 100,000 people out there. And I've never felt like I'll never be a rock star. I mean, I've been to Muscle Shoals, but I felt like a rock star just marching through this downtown canyon and hearing the roar of the crowd. And of course, they were roaring not for me, but because they wanted everybody to they were for throws and for moon pies, because that's the big thing in Mardi Gras Mobile. You throw moon pies out there.
I did not know that. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And then there's a whole entire scene with them. Balls and parties. But if you're not there during Carnival, it's still worth going to the Carnival Museum because you get to see the pomp and the circumstance. And oh my goodness, it is a big, 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 big deal.
If I was interested in Mardi Gras and I was trying to decide between New Orleans and Mobile, how would you help somebody choose between there? Who should go to one and who should go to the other?
That's a good question. They're different experiences.
Yeah.
It'll be easier. It'll be less expensive and easier to do it in Mobile.
Okay.
And your parades will be probably just as crazy and wonderful. It's a little more family friendly.
That's what I was thinking. Okay.
Yeah. Now, New Orleans, it can be very family friendly too, but once you get into the quarter, it can be raunchy and pretty over the top.
Right.
And you can do your share of partying in either city. The nice thing about Mobile, where it feels like New Orleans, is that even the polished businesswoman seems to have a beer koozie in her purse. I mean, I literally have seen one sit down, pull one out. And there is an entertainment district. There's no Bourbon Street, but there's Dolphin Street. And that's an open carry area, so you can carry your drink from bar to bar. I think it's just more manageable in Mobile, and it's more fun. And I don't know if it's more fun, but it's more easy to sort of integrate into it. And one of the prettiest hotels in the country is a historic hotel right downtown called the Battle House Hotel, with a sumptuous lobby and the balcony kind of overlooking the street. And you can stay there. Obviously, the rates are higher during Mardi Gras, but you can still get a room there because it's been completely renovated inside. And that puts you right in the middle of all the action.
Excellent.
And it's harder to do that in New Orleans because it's just a much larger scale.
Well, and this is the only place in Alabama that we already had an episode of Amateur Travelers. So I'm going to move us on. We're going to go down to Gulf Shores. Those beautiful beaches you talked about.
Yes, those sugar sand beaches there. Mm-hmm. I once assigned a story to figure out why they were so beautiful. And essentially, they're the Appalachian Mountains, that the granite for the mountains has been ground down and has come down. And people talk about it. Part of it is just sort of a honky-tonk beach scene that you can find in lots of resorts. But again, it's sort of more laid back. It's easier to navigate.
Well, long beaches, too. We're talking about a lot of beaches. You can easily find your corner. This is not a Coney Island or a European beach where you have to be shoulder to shoulder. You can easily find your corner of the beach.
Oh, definitely. And there's a lot to see. You can go to Gulf Shore State Park has one of the longest piers in the country, so it's easy to go out there for fishing. You can charter boats to go deep sea fishing. So it's
also some great bike trails at that state park as well. And you can stop and see the alligator. What is it, Lefty? That's a local alligator there that I think that's missing its left paw. What do alligators have?
That sounds too cuddly.
that sounds wrong. Yeah.
When I was there once, I joined a group of volunteers for with sea turtles because sea turtles come ashore, they lay their eggs, and then come generally between August and September is when the hatchings come.
And these are leatherback, as I recall.
There are a couple types of turtles there, and I spent a week, 3 or 4 days there, trying to watch a hatch. And when I went to go to point A, they were hatching at point B, and there's really no clearinghouse for it. But when you're on the beach during the day, you can see that the nests are kind of quartered off, so you can know that they're about to hatch. And you can talk to volunteers who are there. And, oh, my goodness, when they start coming out, you just see these little baby turtles, and people are trying to clear the way for them to make their way to the sea. They got confused because in the past, they've gotten confused because of lights from condos and from the streets. These baby turtles wouldn't know where to go, and they wouldn't go toward the ocean. So there's been legislation passed to reduce the lighting and to help them. So that's an interesting part of it that's completely different. Another thing that's worth doing is going to one of the most famous roadhouse bars in the country.
I was going to bring it up if you didn't.
The Floribama. Oh, my goodness. Yes. Which is right on the Florida-Alabama line.
Yep.
It's a sort of a sprawling spectacle of a bar. It's got a bit of everything. It even has Sunday morning church services there, which is always
Is the thing that I sort of wish, if I understood that, I feel like I could understand the South. There's a sign outside that says church service 9 a.m., sinning 10 p.m. or something like that. And I know somebody who actually goes to that church and says it's a great community active church. But yeah, they meet in one of the tents in the back, and you can apparently the bar's open. You can go bring a drink too. And on the other hand, you've got the stage with the brassieres thrown over the wires inside. Not the same stage.
It is. And only an Alabama experience. If I was more of a poet, I could sort of draw it all together and say how that captures Alabama. But it captures a lot of Alabama. There's a lot of fun-loving. There's irreverence. And then there's also faith and family and community. And it comes together in
really
a lot of different ways. It really
is both part of Alabama. So that's why I say I sort of feel if I could get that place, I would have a better picture. The other place to eat that I would recommend, a little different scene, is the Gulf.
I love that place.
Yeah, it's a bunch of containers kind of piled up together just right on the beach, right on the Gulf. Just very casual food, not very expensive food. There are more expensive, fancy places, and I'll point 12 places to eat in Gulf Shores article in the show notes. But one thing I liked about there is, as we were sitting there in the Gulf eating, I mean, it was a Sunday night, it was about 7 o'clock, and the Blue Angels came past. One of the people who worked there said, "Oh, is it 7 o'clock already?" Apparently they're nearby in Pensacola, Florida, and
right.
They just routinely are out someplace doing a show. And so as soon as it came by, it just didn't faze anybody there to see the Air Force aerial precision team or whatever, for those people who don't know who the Blue Angels are. But beautiful, beautiful place.
I'd never heard that before. So you've had an Alabama experience. I haven't there. And another, I'd mentioned the James Beard Awards. One of the nominees for the Best Chef of the South was at Fisher's Upstairs in Orange Beach. So you can go from one extreme to another.
Yep, exactly.
And enjoy it all.
Well, and on the same island that Gulf Shores is on, you can find Fort Morgan Historic Site. That's where, during the Civil War, you get the famous "Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead" from the Battle of Mobile Bay from Admiral Farragut there. So lots of stuff going on down in that area. Are there honorable mentions that we want to mention that didn't make it into your one rapidly turning into 3-week itinerary here in Alabama?
Goodness, there are, of course. We didn't talk about Selma, which is about 45 minutes from Montgomery.
Right. Yep.
There, I think, without getting long into the history, that's where there was a famous march over a bridge where protesters were beaten. I wrote a story once, and I believe it, that to me, walking across that bridge, which people do all the time, they park walk across that bridge, is a much do for an American. And I think it's one of the most beautiful places in America when you think about what happened there. And you're at the crest of the bridge, and you imagine what would it have been like to be standing there and to see people waiting, police waiting and dogs waiting, police with batons, knowing you're going to be beaten, and still walking down and marching for freedom. I mean, I think that's, I had my son walk that with me. I think everybody should walk that bridge and think about the lessons that it brings.
Well, and the visitor center for that National Historic Trail, I think the road to Selma to Montgomery is a National Historic Trail, is about halfway between the two cities, and very easy to get to, maybe 20 minutes from Montgomery, and worth a stop. Only takes, I would say, half an hour to an hour to see, but especially if you don't know that story, I think it's worth visiting.
A few other places. We've talked about Alabama, and I don't know how we have not mentioned the word football, but
you are correct. We really have screwed up here. Yeah.
I mean, I'd be kicked out of the state, and I'm not going to say whether I'm for Alabama or Auburn, but I'm going to tell you that you can go to Tuscaloosa and go to the Bear Bryant. And if you're not from Alabama, you don't understand the obsession with football here. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't born and raised here, so I can't really, it's not in my soul, but the Bear Bryant Museum in Tuscaloosa, Bear Bryant is the famous coach for Alabama. It's just a fascinating look at that culture and that history and why and how football became so important to the state. Tuscaloosa is about an hour from Birmingham. It's where the University of Alabama is based. So that's something, if you're into football, you'll want to do that. A different sort of place, if you have kids with you or if you're interested in cars, you'll never find this in a guidebook, but one of the most fascinating tours I've done in Alabama is the Mercedes plant, which is right in Tuscaloosa. Hmm. And that sounds maybe sort of geeky, kind of, but what it basically is, it's a tour in the future. It's like stepping into a science fiction set, because Mercedes are being made there, but they're being made with robots and humans working in tandem. It's a sprawling facility with people riding bikes all over the place from one manufacturing spot to another. And it's just, you walk in there and you feel like you're walking into the future and you're seeing these precision automobiles being made there in Alabama. If you're not in Tuscaloosa, there's also a Hyundai plant in Montgomery that does, this cars aren't quite as expensive, but you see the same 21st century manufacturing technology happening there. And that is another part of Alabama. That's not the deep South fields.
I haven't done that one, but I've done two different auto assembly line tours. And I'm with you. They're fascinating. I've done the Corvette factory outside Bowling Green, Kentucky, and the Ford truck factory up in Detroit area. And yeah, just if you, especially if you're at all technical or geeky, you'll enjoy it. But it's just fascinating to watch how this whole thing gets done these days.
One other spot near Birmingham, there's a site. It's before the days of social media, nobody would know about this, but it's called Gip Gibson's Juke Joint. Okay. It's a bar, but it's not really a bar. It's every Saturday night, there's a party in a guy's backyard in Bessemer, this working class suburb outside of Birmingham. Gip, we don't know how old he is. I think he's had his 90th birthday three times, but he has this, and there are bands playing in his backyard every Saturday night. It starts with a prayer. Everybody gets together and prays. Okay. And then rock and roll happens, and you bring your own alcohol. It almost was shut down because obviously the neighbors never really liked this, but it's a party, and it's a party with people of all ages, of all races, of sexual orientation, and they're just getting together in Gip's backyard. And who knows how long? As I said, Gip's had his birthday 90th three times, so we don't know how long this is going to go on. There was a fire a couple years ago, and we thought it was over. I had friends who were visiting from California, and they still, to this day, they can't stop talking about that experience there, because there are only two or three or four of these juke joints left in the country, and they're not going to be here for long. So excellent. That's a way to sort of end on a grand note, on a party note, yeah. And an Alabama note, yeah.
The only other spot that I would add is Tuskegee.
Oh, goodness.
Just the equal distance off to the east from Montgomery as Selma is to the west is Tuskegee. And there are two National Historic Sites there. One is the Tuskegee Institute, founded by George Washington Carver, if I remember correctly.
Right.
And then, but what I actually did not get to that, but I got to the Tuskegee Airmen Museum there, and I would have loved another hour. I got there late in the day, unfortunately, as I was trying to cram too much into a trip, like the one we're describing, in fact. But if you're not familiar with this story, this is basically the black man in World War II who defied the thinking that basically black men weren't smart enough to become pilots, to become one of the most successful fighter squadrons in World War II. And it's a fascinating history. And of course, again, some of those people are still alive, although they're rapidly dying off here because they would be in their 90s at this point.
Right.
But there's a lot of video, for instance, that captures people who were in that squadron talking about basically fighting on two fronts, fighting the segregation and at the same time, obviously, fighting, well, they were in Europe, so they were fighting the Germans predominantly. So, yeah, fascinating sight and a great sight for kids, too, just because you're talking about a place with big planes hanging from the ceiling and things like that. It's in one of the hangars where they would have trained here. And it was located in Tuskegee because of the Tuskegee Institute there.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, let's get to some of our wrap-up questions here in what is getting to be a longer episode of The Amateur Traveler. But I hope people detected here that there's some things going on in Alabama. There's some things worth seeing. But if you're standing in the prettiest spot in Alabama, where are you standing and what are you looking at?
For some people, it's going to be at a football game.
Okay.
Maybe yep, top of Mount Sheehaw, which we haven't even really talked about the mountains here. But this is the foothills of the Appalachians. And Mount Sheehaw is the tallest point in Alabama. Okay. It's in the eastern part. And it's looking north, you can sort of see the hills turning into mountains. And it's a peaceful and calming view. It's another part of the state that a lot of people don't get to.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Alabama.
Well, you can get in line with somebody at the grocery store, and by the time you check out with whatever you're buying, you can know their life story. And I think that's wonderful. I really do. It's Southern hospitality is a cliche. Many people think it's a stereotype, but it's real. And I think it's part of the joy of visiting.
Now, we should say you came down to Alabama 11 years ago for a job that you no longer have, but you haven't left.
It's a friendly place to live. It's an easier place to live. There's traffic everywhere, of course, in the world, but traffic isn't bad here. It's not as expensive. It's hard to leave. It gets into your soul.
Now, the one thing we haven't talked about is when you should come. It's a tad warm there in the summer for my taste.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, oh, goodness, maybe we should have this conversation in October. The beaches we were talking about are so beautiful.
Yep.
But people need to know is that Alabama schools start by August 10th, August 15th. So the last couple of weeks of August, you have the beaches to yourself.
Interesting.
And the prices drop. So if you're working on a different school schedule, if you're not in school, you don't have kids in school, this is the time to go, late August. You'll have it to yourself. I would say my favorite time here is springtime, probably in mid-March to mid-April. I had friends visit when you can't time it, but there are cherry blossoms here. There's everything's in bloom. I had friends visiting from San Francisco where they lived all their lives. And they were here during that 1 week where the streets were just sort of canopied with these cherry blossom trees. And one of my friends turned to me and said, wow, we really need to move to Alabama. And I was thinking, San Francisco is nice too. So I don't know, but the springtime is just stunning here.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Alabama in three words, what three words would you use?
Friendly, surprising, and sophisticated.
Excellent. Excellent. And our guest again has been Larry Blyberg. And Larry, if you were going to send us to one story, your best story about Alabama, where would you send us?
Well, my website has several stories because I can't send you to one. I spent a couple days on Greyhound buses going around the South recreating the Freedom Rides.
Oh, which excellent.
I think speaks to both the history, the past, and the present. And because these days, people don't even know about them. So mm-hmm. I would say that to see the past and the future, my Freedom Rider story.
Excellent. Well, I drove out of my way to get up to Anniston, Alabama.
Right.
I was going to say the wrong name again, where there is a national historic site to the Freedom Riders. Although when I was there, there was no site there yet. There was no visitor center. It was just basically a memorial out in the country where one of the buses was attacked that I never found, and a wall of the old, either the Greyhound or the Trailways station where the bus riders were attacked that explained what happened, explained the history, but there was no visitor center. You could go in and watch the movies or things like that. I have heard that maybe they have opened up one or not, but I would check into that before I drive all the way to Anniston. As it is, I don't know that I would recommend going all the way out there unless they do so open up something. But fascinating history, yeah, of the bravery of the people who went down there to challenge that and nearly paid for it with their lives, too. I mean, it was touch and go at some point.
The fact that it is history and isn't current life, I think, is important to remember, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I have to say, just bringing up the bus boycott, one of the most fascinating things I learned, as somebody who watched this unfold as a kid, in the Rosa Parks Museum and Library in Montgomery, they have the demands, and I'm going to kind of put it in air quotes here, that the protesters had, if you can call them demands, because they were basically, treat us with respect, hire some black drivers, and if we're sitting in the back of the bus, we don't have to give up our seat. They weren't looking for integration of the buses or anything. And then the next panel is the just vehement opposition to these what seem now to be just ridiculously non-demands. So it is useful to know how much things have changed in 50 years. Even if they still need to change more, we've made some progress. So, Larry, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your love for Alabama and letting me talk a little bit about mine as well.
It's worth a trip, and we'd love to have you here.
This has been a longer episode, so I think we'll just go to closing now. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. If you're interested in Amateur Traveler trips, amateurtraveler.com/trips. Check out the blog, and as always, thanks so much for listening.